Hello, homies. On today's episode of Homegrown Horror, we cover a case that has some pretty graphic details of domestic and sexual violence. If that is not something that you are equipped to listen to right now, you can always exit now and we will see you again next week. If you are someone you love is experiencing domestic violence, we do have some resources that we talk about in the episode and also in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening and we hope you enjoy this episode.
So make yourself comfortable anywhere you like.
Thank you so much for meeting with me. No problem. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah. You know, it's hard work, but put a lot of heart into it. You know, I just gotta make sure people are safe out there. So it's tough being a PI in this business.
But, I know. I've heard you're the best in the business, which is why I've come to you.
I like to brag.
My podcast partner, his name is Jackson, and he's hiding something. Yeah, I need to find out what it is.
What do you think he's hiding?
I don't know. The guy's a mess. Like,
yeah.
He wears two different socks. One of them has a hole in the bottom.
That's always true. Oh, yeah.
He double dips. Like,
oof. What? He double dips? He double dips. Is it a communal
dipping? Yes.
Oh my God.
He just does it, doesn't say anything, and nobody says anything about it, and I don't...
This guy's a monster.
He keeps his phone on while we're podcasting.
What a maniac. Doesn't he know that ruins the whole vibe if the phone goes off in the middle of the recording?
I honestly feel like he's involved in something, and he's just, you know, he needs to have his phone on him. Like, what if... I really need your help. I don't trust the guy anymore, honestly. He's not the guy I became friends with.
All right, don't worry, B. We're going to be taking care of this. I'll be paying special interest to this individual. So, what are you thinking? Does he need to?
No. I just need to know.
Okay. So I'll just tail him a bit.
Yes.
You sure you don't want me to?
No, I'm good.
Yep. All right. Okay, we'll take care of it.
Thank you.
Hello! Welcome to
Homegrown Horror.
Main spooky podcast about main spooky things, true crime, horror, cryptids, ghosts, ghouls, goblins. I'm Jackson, a co-host.
I am B, a co-host. And welcome. We're going to talk about the weather for a second. It's finally rainy.
It's raining!
Because it has been a little humid.
Yeah, like solid 90 for the last few days. And now it's like 48 degrees.
It's kind of nice, yeah, because we went to help our friend Anna, who runs the main Volva podcast. She's starting a brand where she makes soap, salves, things like that. And we were making soap last weekend, and it was so hot, it cooked the soap. Yeah. And it started to rice. Like, it looked like porridge. Wow. So we had to throw the whole batch away.
Oh, such a disappointment.
Too damn hot.
Too damn hot to make soap.
Yes.
That's why you're, like, in a cramped little space, too. That does get hot on its own, even in the winter.
So, yeah. So we're going up again this weekend, and hopefully it will be not as...
Are you doing that tomorrow?
Yes.
Sick.
Yeah, I said this weekend. Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, we're in the weekend.
We are fully lodged in
our situation here.
Into the weekend. Yeah, so I'm happy that it's a little rainy. And then also, it's a free car wash for my car.
Is that how you treat it? Probably should still get the rust inhibitor at least,
I know. I am a pretty big fan of Ingrid Michaelson, and she has a song. And one of the lyrics is, "We hate the rain when it fills our shoes, but oh, we love it when it washes our cars." Me.
Last thing you want, is step in a big old puddle, get your boots all soaked up. I'm going to be suit shopping today, actually, after this. I'm going to go.
Why?
To look presentable at my new job.
That's right. Yeah. Jackson has.
It's one of those jobs you got to dress up at.
The first day of my new job, it just says smart casual.
Smart casual.
Mm-hmm.
I think mine's also in, I don't know, smart casual. I saw people walking around with tucked in flannels. you know?
So we're just going to go buy you a ton of flannels at Martin's. Not sponsored.
I'm thinking of just, I don't need to go balls to the wall. And I say suit shopping. I was gifted a gift card for my birthday so I could go do this. But I can't.
Is it like one of those Visa gift cards or is it to like Men's Warehouse?
It's to like Brooks Brothers. So I can buy one
Did
blazer.
You get this from your Allegra's dad?
Allegra's dad called me up and said, Jackson, I think you need to start looking sharp.
Allegra's dad shills Brooks Brothers for free. Maybe should pay that man.
They should pay him. Yeah, maybe he does have a deal on the side then, you know? No, my parents also shill for Brooks Brothers. I think it's a boomer kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they've got some nice stuff, but...
There's some fancy shit. I was looking it up, but it's like... But at the same time, it's like the gift card is not a small amount, but I'm like looking online.
You're
going to
get like
to...
a shirt.
Well, that was
and a tie.
I could probably get a couple shirts, but like, yeah, looking at just the lineup, it's like, I'll be lucky if I can get like a jacket, which is like one of the main things I wanted to get. And I'm looking at the prices and I'm like, I'm not sure I can get one. So I'm going to the outlet and hoping for like something to be on sale.
Yeah. I wish you so much luck. I really do. I've never had the misfortune of suit shopping for myself.
Yeah.
I have suit shopped for actors.
Yeah.
And that is fun on its own. Because, yeah. Like, I had one where, like, I could not find his pant size because his inseam was so... He was a tall man. Shout out to Ashanti. The tallest man I've ever had to work with.
I get it that, I get it that, well, like, some places
that's not
are...
true.
Fancier than others. But,
he's the tallest person that I personally have had to costume. I have worked with a man that was like 6'9".
Oh, wow.
And
is he dead?
No, he was the monster in Young Frank.
Of course.
And
they still gave him lifts, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. So with the lifts, he was 7'3".
Damn.
And also,
this guy could have played the alien.
Yes, he could have. I also just, I need everyone to know because if you've ever seen The Greatest Showman, he's in that movie. He's the strong man. Also, right. If any of you are familiar with Hadestown, he's in that. He was on Frozen on Broadway. Timothy Hughes is the tallest man that I've worked with, but Ashanti is the tallest man that I personally have had to go shopping for.
Yeah.
And it was a nightmare.
This freak's really made a career out of his freakishness. We need a really tall freak of a person.
I know.
I wonder what those casting calls must look like when they read the description. Tall freak.
Oh, I am struggling to pivot. So we're just going to, I'm just going to say like the most obvious pivot. We're going to go.
Today we're talking about the topic.
How about this? We're going to dive 7'3" deep into this crazy ass story.
Ooh.
So I want to say thank you to my Grammy Celeste because we were over there having dinner and we were getting ready to leave and we were just kind of talking about specifically, like this is the most pleasant conversation, but we were specifically talking about domestic violence.
Oh, fun.
That's the kind of episode we're talking about today.
It's a DV episode, everybody.
It is. So I'm actually going to say this like up front. If you or someone you love is experiencing domestic violence, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. There are Maine specific resources, including the statewide domestic violence helpline, which is 1-866-834-HELP. I wasn't able to find what those numbers are because I don't have an old school phone. But you can also go to www.mecedv.org/get-help. And I will be putting those in the show notes as well. But yeah, so we were talking about domestic violence and she told me a little bit about this story.
Just a tad. Just a taste.
Yep.
So she's like familiar with it or she knew people related
to it? She remembers the verdict coming down.
The verdict?
Mm-hmm. And we will get to that. That's part of my story. Okay. It's baked into the story. Okay. Everybody buckle up because we're going to have a bad time.
There's no seatbelts on this couch.
I know. It's been a little while since I've done something this heavy.
Oh, this is a heavy one?
John
didn't realize where domestic violence would be so dark.
Yeah. John and Jacqueline Bevins, Jack and Jackie, as their neighbors called them, had been married for 23 years. They met in Massachusetts in the 70s while Jackie had been waitressing as a single divorcee and mother. Jack was also divorced, and he swept her off her feet and into a whirlwind life. In 1975, the two moved to Maine with their sons Doug, who was Jack's son from a previous marriage, and Peter, Jackie's son from a previous marriage. They settled into the coastline of York, with Jackie opening a restaurant in Perkins Cove, which is part of Ogunquit, called Jackie's Two. And I'm not going to lie, like, that's a thing, because there's also JJ's Two in, like, T-O-O in Old Orchard. So I don't know why that's, like, a naming theme in these coastal towns.
Yeah.
But she has a restaurant, Jackie's Too. According to friends, she worked really hard because it was just this sort of, like, little nook cafe, and she turned it into a bustling full-service restaurant.
I kind of like the name. It's a little more creative than I remember in Connecticut. I'm going to need to give a little shout-out to a pizza place that I liked.
Yeah?
Called Hometown Pizza. Started in Thomaston area, Thomaston, Connecticut area.
Not Thomaston, Maine.
No, not Thomaston, Maine. And spread out quite a bit. They never, like, they were always the same name, but with different numbers at the end. Oh. So you'd know which, like, came after. So you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to Hometown Pizza. You just say Hometown usually. But Hometown Pizza, it's like, oh, and it's over here is Hometown Pizza 3, Hometown Pizza 5.
It's really funny because when we would say we're going to Hometown, we meant Hometown Buffet.
Nice.
Which is not there anymore.
Still love that chicken bacon ranch pizza. I think about it sometimes.
Well, I don't know what kind of food. I assume that it was probably like American cuisine was served at Jackie's too. Like, because this is a tourist area.
Yeah.
So it's going to be something, you know, full service, but it's quick.
You're going to have they'll have your seafood adjacent touristy options.
Yes,
you know,
that's probably.
Maybe a lobster roll is on the menu every once in a while at the market price, you know.
Yeah. Neighbors knew and respected Jackie's work ethic. She was very well known. She had a lot of other friends that owned restaurants, and she was just like, everyone was like, she would work from like, she'd get up, you know, she'd take care of the boys and like just work.
Yeah.
She was kind of a workaholic.
It's kind of, that's also admirable in itself because it's like you can see the business owner managing all this stuff in front of you and see them work hard. So you feel like whatever success they have coming their way is deserved rather than like a business owner that is like hands off.
Yeah.
Just leaves everything to other people and it's kind of like, yeah, whatever. But if you're out there already in front of the community, then you have this attachment to the community as you're working. But I couldn't imagine doing that. I don't like the idea of working that much and owning a business. That's a lot of stress. Because it's not, the work is not ending when the day shift is over. You got to do some books.
Yeah,
you
got to
do some payroll. It's a lot of stuff.
It is a lot. Jack had his own reputation, which was in stark contrast to the one that his wife was building. And I am not going into the deep detail on Jack. Dark Down East did a two-part episode covering this case and went more deep into that. And then also there is a couple articles floating around, which I do have as sources. So I'll talk about that when we get there. But
we'll just say,
what you need to know is...
we'll just say you know, Dark Down East probably has a legal team.
We don't.
We have a Perry Mason bobblehead.
Yes. So he had been involved in crime, like, since he was a bit younger. He had become involved in, when they moved to Maine, he was involved in the trucking business, and he also operated a quote-unquote cement company in the Cayman Islands.
Cement, she did quotations around cement company.
Because I think most people, like, some articles just, like, wholesale were like, he ran a cement company, and the others were like, it may have been a front for something else.
I'll give my little story because it's kind of funny. I already shared this with you. So cement company, we're putting a lot of quotations around that.
And it's not, I don't think it's a hitman business. People think it's money laundering.
Okay, money laundering. Fair enough. Yeah, in the Cayman Islands, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Those books are very secret.
Yes.
But what could you imagine, like, getting your hands on the books of, like, a Cayman Islands business? Just seeing all this money funneling in from other countries.
Wasn't Firefest supposed to be in the Cayman Islands?
I think it was, yeah. Where did it end up being?
Dude, I've watched like 3 documentaries on it and I still couldn't tell you.
Dude, yeah, same here. I've also watched like three
documentaries. Oh, Norman's Cay.
Norman's Cay.
Next to a Sandals resort.
Right. They're so close to like amenities and they're out here just fucking dying.
Yeah, it's because like it was booked. There's insane.
But yeah, so my dad. My dad met a guy on a plane one time and. They were chatty. My dad's very chatty. Adam, you've never met him, but he's a chatty guy. He's very friendly. He can make friends with anybody. It's pretty remarkable. He's talking to this guy next to him, and they're chatting, and the guy's like, "Oh yeah, he seems like this kind of gruff New York type guy." He says, "Oh yeah, I own a disposal business." And this guy is really shady about, like, what does that mean? It's just like, oh, so who do you work for? And he's like, oh, whoever asks. And then he slips him his card. I don't remember the name of the business, but something disposal service.
I'm glad you don't remember.
Yeah, something disposal service. And then the tagline on the card was, "We don't fuck around." Like, all right.
Yeah. Hardcore guy. Speculation abound as to what he's disposing. But Jack was no stranger to shady businesses, and he had a larger-than-life playboy persona that matched his sleazy dealings. Jack and Jackie had been married for 23 years, and on the morning of April 3rd, 1990, police arrived at the Bevins' home to find Jack naked in a pool of his own blood in the bathroom. Jackie had shot him, unloading a .32-caliber Harrington and Richardson model 7.32 into her husband, 15 times.
That's a lot of bullets.
It is a lot of bullets. And I was talking with my grandfather. My grandfather's a gun guy. And he was like, yeah, she would have had to reload. She would have had to reload.
How many times? Twice?
I don't know.
Well, 15, that's not an even number.
Yeah, I didn't look to do the research to see how...
I'd like to imagine it's like 7 rounds in the clip. Or is it a clip or is it like a revolver? I don't know anything. Let's look up the gun. Look up the gun, B.
You look it up. All you right. Have a phone.
Okay, fine. It's a revolver. Holy shit. Yep.
How many bullets fit in the chamber?
About 6. So.
Three times.
She did it 3 times.
Three times.
Or she loaded twice.
Yes.
That's she really wanted this guy dead.
Well.
I think like the first 6 are getting the job done. And then the rest is just, I'm here for the fun.
So there are some people that say like she like pumped. There's one article that says she pumped her husband with 15 rounds, but the other articles have also said that she was just kind of blindly shooting.
Okay.
So we don't...
Wait, so but what, there were 15 rounds in him, though.
That is not clear. Hmm. No, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to assume yes.
Because it's like, when I hear shot 15 times, that means... bullet in skin.
Yeah, so that's probably true.
In any event, actually, that makes a little more sense why she reloaded so much and didn't like unload all the clips.
Yeah,
like because it's like that would have been off a little bit. So she was like maybe missing and probably reloaded a couple times, and this guy's like, whoa, trying to dodge like the mask.
Oh, dear
you
God.
Know?
Oh no.
Ba-ba-da-da-da-da-da.
Pretty quickly, Jackie checked herself into the psychiatric unit of Maine Med, and she was later charged with murder, and she retained the counsel of a lawyer who would later be known as the Lion of the Bar.
Whoa!
Daniel G. Lilly.
Whoa! The Lion...
He died a couple years ago, and that's... People were like... Because he was a very well-known criminal defense lawyer here in the state.
He was known for criminal defense. That's so interesting.
the lion of the bar. And I was like, if I was a lawyer, that I would want that to be my
I would
reputation.
Love to be a lion of anything. Yeah. Absolutely. It's like, wouldn't you love to be called the lion of insurance benefits?
No. Daniel G. Lilly. Lilly would put together a team to investigate for the defense case, including PI Joseph D. Thornton, Mary A. Davis, attorney at law, paralegal Robin McDonald, and a handful of forensic...
I'm sorry. Your name's Ronald McDonald.
Robin McDonald.
Oh, Robin McDonald. I heard Ronald. My brain just put it together that way. Just like it subconsciously put the pieces there.
So... Robin McDonald and a handful of forensic psychiatrists psychologists.
Wait, the paralegal is Robin?
Yeah.
He's the sidekick.
Oh, he kind of is.
Paralegals are like the lawyer sidekicks.
Yes. I was not able to find court documents. So a majority of this comes from battered woman syndrome / the self-defense in theory in homicide, which is an article written by the private investigator Joseph D. Thornton, and he's also the one that that article has a lot more of Jack's background, if you're interested in that.
This is a hardcore legal team to have on your side. So she had to have some bank.
I assume so, yes. Yeah, because he goes on to say...
The lion of the bar does not come cheap.
I don't think so.
And then you got to throw a paralegal on top of that? Damn.
Yeah, so Thornton outlines the findings of their investigation as well as the court proceedings. And I'm just going to say, like, since I don't have the court documents, don't take his word as gospel. But I think the fact that he was part of the defense team, I kind of trust what he says.
I think it's really cool they have an private investigator too. That's really cool.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is...
Have you ever wanted to be a private investigator? Have you ever thought of having that noir lifestyle? Yes.
There is a podcaster. I believe it's on That's Why We Drink. She worked at a PI office for a hot second. Wow. And she was like, loved it. But also my grandmother, same one that actually recommended me this case, has taken a class on private investigation.
There was a
My grandmother takes a class on everything.
There was a class that I was going to take back in Tacoma when I was kind of in between things and not really sure what I was going to do. Someone suggested that I file to take a PI, basically like internship course type situation.
Yeah.
It's like I would work as a PI or work with PIs and then could become PI.
It's probably like tattoo artists where, you know, you have to work under someone.
Yeah, there's like some licenses or something you need to do. But I always thought that would be fun because I always have the image of like... nice guys, PI kind of detective work where I'm just going around bumbling around a case, getting drunk and punching people.
Isn't that just Disco Elysium?
Yeah, I guess.
So the court proceedings were held in Elfred at the York County Superior Court. State Prosecutor Assistant Attorney General Thomas Goodwin and his team laid out their theory. Jack was planning to move his most recent girlfriend, a 26-year-old that he met in the Cayman Islands, to Ogunquit. According to them, Jackie had had enough of his infidelity and had planned to murder him. Unfortunately for the prosecution, the story is way more complex and way more twisted than they had originally anticipated. First off, Jack had been unfaithful to Jackie throughout his marriage, including a year-long affair in 1985 with Jackie's two employee, Suzanne Jackson. Whoa. Put a pin in that, which eventually Jackie found out about. There's a lot of Jacks. Yeah, she found out about
that. Whole year.
Yeah,
damn.
Yeah, her employee was having an affair with her husband.
That is rough.
There's so many, because there's Jack, Jackie, Suzanne Jackson, and then the restaurant Jackie's too.
Jeez.
So I tried really hard to be, but yes, put a pin in Suzanne Jackson for a minute. But the cheating was a normal part of their relationship.
This guy was a party guy and was just doing whatever he wanted.
He did whatever he wanted. And from what it looked like, he really loved to rub her face in the fact that he was having affairs.
So he was such a dick.
Oh.
He was like, he's flaunting this behavior.
Get ready. So in addition to the cheating, Jack had other nasty habits, including drinking, probably cocaine, and abusing Jackie.
Okay, that's the worst part. I understand a person having a little, hitting the slopes every once in a while, having a drinky poo here and there. But
breaking the vows of their marriage.
Breaking the vows of their marriage, that's pretty bad. And then also beating your wife
is the worst.
Unforgivable.
Absolutely. Over the years, Jackie kept diaries, and as her marriage deteriorated, she started seeing a therapist. During the investigation, she was actually diagnosed with battered woman syndrome, which, from my understanding, the thing about battered woman syndrome is, like, they have to prove it in court, number one. Number two, it makes it very difficult.
How do they prove it in court? I feel like that's such a high-intensity situation to prove anything.
I'm so glad you asked, because in addition to documentation from the victim herself, the community had a keen idea of the type of violence Jack was inflicting. Thornton notes, quote, "Fortunately, the investigation in this case was well-funded. The resources of our client allowed us to thoroughly canvass the community in which she lived and worked. Many of the above referenced instances of violence were documented by us only after gathering notes from her consultations with other attorneys and therapists. Court records of proceedings which resulted from these instances of abuse, police reports of their responses to calls from Jackie in Maine, Massachusetts, and Florida, medical records from those jurisdictions are probing by interviews, the memories of her friends and relatives, all were woven together to form an account of their tumultuous years together. The hours upon hours of interviews conducted over the course of 18 months between her arrest and the trial enabled the defense team to present 22 witnesses who testified to having observed instances of physical and emotional abuse or evidence thereof after the fact. Multiple interviews of some of the key witnesses occurred after the psychologist and/or investigator who discovered circumstances surrounding the incident, which, when related to the witness, jogged their memory of previous forgotten details. Attempts of the client to conceal these instances of abuse, typical behavior of the battered woman, complicated our task. She had used various devices to mask the effects of a facial bruise. She wore long-sleeve shirts, even in warmer weather, to cover the damage inflicted by her husband's beatings. She made excuses or gave vague explanations to those who did observe and comment. This behavior made it more difficult to jog the memory of witnesses to a particular instance of abuse. These instances had to be placed in the context of a sequence of events around which the instance of abuse had occurred. For instance, a particular visit by a friend's on a holiday weekend during a summer month might produce a memory of something which had happened privately. The witness might remember the masking attempt by our client the following day. It is not an easy task to unearth these episodes, although their frequency over the years helped us to do so. Since Jackie was a prominent and respected member of the community, and Jack, because of his lifestyle, was less highly regarded, there was a great deal of support and sympathy for her within the area, which the Attorney General's office and the Maine State Police underestimated. Often interviewing one of the witnesses with regard to a specific incident led to two or three additional witnesses to that event and their correct recollection of similar episodes. In that manner, we were helped in overcoming the insidious deception in which BWS, battered woman syndrome, fosters. We were able to develop an extensive history of abuse, which played an important role in explaining our client's actions on the morning of the shooting. Witnesses to the incidents of abuse, which had occurred some 20 years earlier, telephoned the Office of Defense Counsel during the trial after reading newspaper accounts of testimony from the preceding day. I was dispatched to interview some of them during the trial, and one actually testified despite not having been listed on as a defense witness. Unquote.
This is fascinating because it's, I like that observation of, like, when one person's coming out, she has all the support, it's bringing all these other witnesses out of the woodwork. They're all giving corroborating evidence saying she was masking a lot, basically, is what I'm hearing from what you just said.
And the thing that's also interesting is, like, they're able to, like, there's so many different pieces of evidence. Like, the interviews are lining up with documents from, like, police reports and things like that. Like, it's very fascinating. And
But I do want to point out something that he said, because I think it's important to just mention. She was well-regarded in the community, and so she had a lot of people on her side.
Yeah.
This does not always occur.
No, it doesn't always occur. And I mean, I think also it's interesting that a lot of people are more in favor of, say, her versus her husband, which is interesting. So it sounds like already people have a pretty negative viewpoint on the husband.
Yeah.
Because he has this sort of criminal lifestyle. Sure, he's an asshole. He probably
has friends. I don't know a whole lot about his family. Well, his friends
are shitty.
I don't know a lot about his family. So there probably are people who cared about this man. But many in the community did offer their support to Jackie through letters. And like he said, acting as witnesses. There were like 22 some odd witnesses.
But also, so this has been occurring for a long time as well. All this abuse. I would say, because you described, what was it, 7 states where some...
Three states.
Whatever.
Maine, Massachusetts, Florida.
Okay. 27 states that were described just now as having all this abuse. Anyway, so yeah, the three states, Maine, Massachusetts, Florida. What a fucking migration pattern of just like the typical Mainer with some money.
Yeah, for real. So one of the, you can take your pen out now, one of the,
Ooh!
It's Suzanne Jackson.
She's been writhing under that pen so long, I felt so bad.
Suzanne Jackson, aforementioned ex-fling of Jack and the employee of Jackie's too, testified in Jackie's defense. She's working for the defense.
Okay, she's working for the defense.
Yeah, no. Women supporting women. Women supporting women.
Yeah. You know, one Reddit, like specific Reddit story I like to come across.
Yeah.
So I like to go into the best of Redditor updates, which are usually just like original posters posting like traumatic or crazy things they're dealing with, and then they're updating their post as time goes on.
Yeah.
I love those kinds of posts because it's so interesting to see like the story unfold. It's kind of cool to see the real life examples of that happening. Mm-hmm. The ones I like are when someone's getting cheated on, and then the person that the partner's like cheating side piece, comes out to the like other partner and says, hey, your so-and-so has been cheating with me, here's all the evidence.
Yeah,
I love that shit.
Yeah, those are, again, women supporting women. We love to see it. Okay, so I've got another pretty big quote here. This is also from the article from Thornton, but he attributes this quote to Lily. With their findings, they outlined the extent of abuse. Quote, Jack would hit Jackie, send her to her room, slap her, blacken her eye, bloody her nose, pin her to a stone wall with his car on one occasion.
Whoa!
He had urinated on her in the bathtub on their wedding night.
Is he Lyndon Baines Johnson? What the fuck?
He had threatened to kick her out of the house if she visited her mother, assaulted her approximately once a month for 4 years, from 1970 to 1974, broke her eardrum, hit her eye, blurring her vision, beating her up, glass objects, tried to hit her with a piece of firewood while pinning her against the floor, demanded that she wait by the telephone for his calls, constantly told her that she was a problem, called her fat, ugly pig, beaten her in the bathtub, forced sex upon her, threw a toaster at her head, forced objects in her vagina, such as a banana, the handle of a knife, a Coke bottle, a candle, and had raped her more than once. He also had frightened her by driving her over 100 miles an hour on a back road. He had taken money from her, which he then spent on his girlfriend. He had run her down with a car and driven her on the windshield. He had locked her in the bathroom and had a particularly nasty habit of locking her outdoors in cold weather. He had pushed her onto a stone fireplace, punched her, knocked her down the stairs in Christmas of 1989, threatened to kill her, told her repeatedly that no one liked her, and had threatened to feed her to the alligators, unquote. I'm assuming that most of these were corroborated in some way by police reports and things, because he outlined all of the
you know, the extensive research they did, it seems to me that they would only mention these things in court if they were able to back them in some way.
You know, there are just times I don't like killing or any like murder, yeah. Really. I've been pretty vocal about how I don't like that. It's not really justifiable. This is pretty justified. This is very justified. This man is a monster.
So, to add insult to injury, and I think that's an understatement, Jack had attempted to hire a hitman to murder Jackie.
What the fuck?
Hoping to make it look like a robbery gone wrong. He had planned on hiring Nick Theodore, who...
Just get a divorce!
He would actually eventually testify for the defense, because when he was asked to do this, he felt uncomfortable with the proposition and had actually alerted Jackie to what her husband was planning. And this, I believe, was like four to 6 weeks before the incident occurred.
Why?
So keep in mind, so that's sort of probably part of what's playing in the back of her head is like, he tried to fucking hire someone to kill me.
Yes. Yes. Her life is in danger at this point. This is basically self-defense.
Yep.
You know, because he's just going to keep escalating.
And I mean, and that's what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Prior to that fateful morning, Thornton had noted that Jackie had filed for divorce twice. Pamela Ferdin of the Washington Post said that Jack had recently asked for a divorce, most likely to start a new life with his new girlfriend. Thornton explains, quote, the psychological experts had tried to explain what her thought process had been as she discharged the handgun in his direction some 15 times. The gun had been kept in the house for protection, it having been given to her by the chief of police for her safety. In the past,
Came in handy.
In the past, Jackie had put up with Jack's dalliances. She had not shot her abuser as the result of that relationship or many others, both before and after it. Jackie had, in fact, consulted with counsel on a number of occasions exploring the possibility of divorce. Ironically, she had such an appointment scheduled on the morning of the shooting. Evidence showed that Jackie had actually filed for divorce twice prior to April 3rd, 1990, not having gone through with it either time. The evidence showed that Jack and Jackie were arguing that morning upon his return from a weekend away with a 26-year-old girlfriend whom he had acquired in the Cayman Islands that winter. He had shared with Jackie the fact that he intended to move her into a condominium in Ogunquit for the summer and live with her there. Jackie was not pleased by this suggestion, and as counsel suggested in his summation, it was obvious to everyone that saw them that morning because Jackie wears her heart on her sleeve. The evidence showed that through both state's witnesses and our witnesses that she had spent hours crying over Jack throughout the years. This had been a classic love-hate relationship with all of the emotions and turmoil which accompany one. Ogunquit had seen all of this from them before, unquote.
This is awful.
This is awful.
I hate this.
This is awful. With the abuse and the possible attempt on her life and the unending horrors that he put her through, Lily would later say in an interview, quote, I don't think she's any different from someone who has come back from war and had taken lives of the enemy. It was kill or be killed situation. The guy had done everything to this woman and it was time to stop, unquote.
I'm just surprised that they didn't start the process for divorce sooner. It just, from the outset,
but pissed, you have to remember, it takes most women 3 to 4 times to leave their abuser, on average.
I know, and it's awful, and it's just, but it's to the point where this guy is trying to fucking kill her, and I'm like, why is this your solution?
Well, the...
cause they're fucking maniacs.
The thing is, we also don't know if he's coming back to her and, like, being like, oh, I brought you these things. And like, we don't know what was in between the abuse.
Yeah.
And that's usually the thing that makes, like, it's either the fear or the, okay, he didn't mean it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Sour Patch Kid, I guess. Sour sweet, sweet, you know.
But, and it's a psychological disorder. Or, yeah. You know, they're not psychological disorder, but battered woman syndrome is. But like.
Yeah, yeah. They put the,
she's
the,
what not happens, it's well. This,
as they say, it's the cycle of abuse.
Yes.
It's the abuse. Then there's the fake apologies, and then it's back into it.
I also want to say, I just said she's not well. She's not well mentally, physically. There's no safety. I don't mean like she's sick in the head. Like, I just want to make that clear that that's, wow, I think that my voice just knocked over some of the sound panels.
We have a shoddy setup with some of the sound panels in this space, so we prop them up and a couple fell over.
There's a lot to be said about this, but I personally think that, like, I think they rose to the occasion, which is usually very difficult in this case. I think, again, part of it has to do, she had great fun, like, she had the money, she was well-liked in the community. If you have a woman that's, like, isolated and doesn't have the money, they are not...
I would love to know more about the commute. The community got involved, and it sounds like they got involved really fast to... Yes. The defense of her. What I would love to know more is, were people already speaking out in her defense and like trying to get her to leave like early within all this? Because it's like she's well liked. She's, you know what's awful? She's working 8-10 hour days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably
taking care of her son and his son, which is now her son.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But she's also probably working those days on purpose.
Yeah.
This is something that my grandma taught me. When a person is spending all their time at work, it's because they don't want to go back home. And it's like, a lot of, you know, it's like a lot of these fucking weird hustle bro people are like, you got to put in the 12 hours. This person just has, in my opinion, when somebody says that, their home life is sad or abusive or miserable,
whatever.
It's like, they don't want to go back home.
I don't know about that. I feel like if people did try to get involved, like, this is also the 90s, so I think that there was more of a sort of feeling of, like, you don't want to intrude on someone's business. So I don't know.
Mainers in themselves are very closed off in some ways. They do keep to themselves in
It's just, I find it hard, because, like, there have been instances where, like, I've talked to people, and it's, you know, it's like, But your partner's an asshole or whatever. But at the same time, it's like, would I go up to them and be like, hey, I think if they haven't told me anything, she's hiding this. Like, people know that they fight, but she's hiding the out and out abuse, quote unquote.
It seems that more people are aware of the situation than we realize, because also... Where'd the gun come from? The sheriff.
So, I don't know if, like, because there was, like, another attempted robbery, and he had given it to her for that. I don't know if that's the only reason, because you could reason to say that he was, like, this is a good excuse to give her this.
So we weren't going to talk... We're not talking about the crime situation or the connections to the crime.
Yeah.
But I think y'all go read that article.
Because I read it to you. I read it to you?
You read me some details of connections, and we'll just say, we don't want to wake up with a horse head in our bed. So I got to say, when it comes to the open secrets, even the police will know, you know? Yeah. So I feel like...
Which we've seen before, when you did the Belfast operation and, you know, they're open secrets.
Yeah. So it's like, they're trying to find enough evidence to pin it, but, you know, if things are insulated, no one's talking to each other, it's hard to get there.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody was going after him or anything like that, or if they were just kind of like, he's kind of insignificant and seems to only be causing harm to this one person, which is... fucking terrible still, but, like, I don't know how that works.
I'm sure his cement business has caused a lot of harm to people.
Yeah. After 4 hours of deliberation in October of 1991, the jury agreed with the defense, not the prosecution.
Jesus.
They agreed with the defense. They were given the opportunity to convict her of a lesser charge of manslaughter, but chose to acquit her of all charges in light of the evidence. Even the prosecution, the lawyer Goodwin, noted that had he seen all the evidence, specifically mentioning a video taken of Jackie at the police station after the morning of the shooting, he would have actually pursued manslaughter instead of murder at the outset. And he was pissed at the police. Pissed. Because the defense showed up. Like, obviously, their investigation blew the prosecution's out of the fucking water. And it's the state of Maine. This woman had a better investigation team than the state of Maine did.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, I would also be mad.
I would be mad too. Yeah. It's, I mean, it is frustrating because we already know that the justice system is totally fucked and favors the rich because the rich have the resources to pursue every slight against them and also have the best defense money can buy, whereas everybody else that has unfortunately gets in the crosshairs of some of these situations has to deal with the state-sponsored shit.
Yes.
Which is just overworked and underpaid attorneys.
Yep.
So it's like,
I mean, because I also did want to mention, because we're seeing it a lot where women are women will be abused and then eventually take the lives of their abusers. And Florida is a great example because they have a stand your ground law. For some reason, those don't apply to those women. The prosecution keeps finding ways to make it so that does not apply to them. Wow. And you're seeing it a lot specifically in communities of color.
Yeah.
So there's that.
There's that.
But my grandmother recalled this day. The day that the verdict came down, she had gone to work at, she was working at the telephone company at the time, and she told her friend Susan the news of Jackie's acquittal, and Susan responded, "Good for her." I really think that most people, that if they kept up with the case, they were kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, I think that there are some people who are like, she got away with murder, but, you know. 9 years later, in 1999, Jackie Bevins, having kept Jackie's Two open and thriving through it all, was elected as one of 5 selectmen for the city of Agunquit.
Hell yeah! You slay, queen. Literally.
Ferdin, in the Washington Post article, has some great quotes that really paint the picture of how the community feels about her. Quote, "What she did yesterday has no bearing on what she does tomorrow," unquote, said Robert Camatora, a local restaurant owner and friend. And he also said, "The past is the past. The woman has got
past
grit."
Pasta.
Yeah, the woman has got grit. She knows better than anybody that there was more talk behind her back than to her face, and that's got to be a hard life to lead, said fellow selectman Karen Maxwell.
Exhibit A, this podcast.
Yeah. Another quote, she's very interested in the welfare of the town and its betterment, so even if she was Lizzie Borden, she would still have gotten in, said Richard Perkins, a friend and restaurant owner.
Damn, dude. Yeah. Okay. I think my thoughts earlier was, yeah, she just had the community completely on her side. And we're rooting for her throughout this. Yeah. No one liked her husband, it sounds like. And
Because I made a joke in the bonus for a little girl who lives down the lane. But, like, it's Earl. Earl had to die by the Dixie Chicks.
Earl had to die.
Like,
I love the Dixie Chicks. They're different names now, right?
It's the Chicks. But the Chicks. I would also like to point out that she was also reelected in 2001 when her term was up. So sick. She got reelected. That same article notes that, quote, "Publicly, many people laud Bevins for her kindness and civic contributions. For nearly 2 decades, she has served as a community volunteer and appointed member of several town boards. Friends say she serves hot chocolate to children at the annual Christmas tree lighting, brings magazines to prisoners at the York County Jail, and supports employees and business owners with supplies and money in times of need," unquote.
What a legitimately nice person. I really like that she's bringing magazines to prisoners because I think that just shows she is a good person. I mean,
yeah, it's definitely, you know, she, yeah.
Because it's like, politicians are so fucking surface level and easy to understand and just slimy people. So it's like, why would she go out of her way to help the needs of a not even constituents, a base of people that do not have the ability to vote? I think that alone shows there is a genuine human niceness to that person, mm-hmm. you know?
While there's obviously people who disagreed with the verdict, one person actually noted that, quote, Jacqueline Bevins is a person about whom it is impossible not to have an opinion, unquote. Jackie also told the Portland Press Herald that, quote, I felt isolated doing my own form of punishment. I think the town has accepted me for who I am, a very fair and honest person, unquote. And that is the story of Jack and Jackie Bevins.
You know, this is very different from the conclusions we typically get to, you know?
This one I feel okay with. Because I did look at, because her son did pass away at, not too long ago, but.
It must have been young, holy shit.
Yeah, her stepson, I should say, but it seemed like their relationship was fine after this. I mean, his obituary was very, like, it said that he was predeceased by his father. Didn't give any details on that, because it's about the celebration of his life. But it seemed like things were pretty okay. Okay, I assume that maybe the three of them, you know, Jackie and her two sons, ended up having a lot of therapy, a lot to work through. But, and again, I don't know, because it seems like besides her being involved as a selectman, she was pretty, it seemed like she was pretty, doesn't really have a presence, if you feel me.
Yeah.
So, and again, I feel like Jack probably does have family. His girlfriend was probably upset. But, you know, here's my thought. I definitely think that, like, even though it's like, oh, she had to reload and whatever, it's like shock and panic and fear can do a lot to a person.
She was being tortured for years.
Yeah. And if any of that is remotely real, which I believe it is based on the amount of backing they have from documentation from police and court documents and just all of this stuff, is like, I would be pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, you can't say that you could go through that and not be terrified.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean,
it is beyond.
Good for her.
Yeah, that is, yeah, I had 11, like, when I was doing the document, because of how big it was like 11 pages. Like, I do my font very big. You could not pass this in to college and say it was 11 pages, but it was 11 pages. But yeah, I will have more stuff down below. Like I said, that article, there's a lot more detail. Dark Down East did 2 episodes of it. They're the only other podcast I've seen do this case.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, like, there's,
because they have a legal team.
I know. There is a lot of information, and there's also not. So there's a lot of newspapers.com articles that I did not have access to. So I used, you know, what I could, but
if you see in the news that our cars exploded, you'll know why.
No! Don't say that. I don't know if I've ever told this story. I listened to Cult Podcast, and they actually have their lawyer is pro bono, because he had issues with this self-betterment group, which is definitely a cult, but I'm not gonna say what it is. But he,
because he works for big podcasts.
Yeah, but he this said self-betterment company, quote unquote,
a self-betterment company
put a snake in his mailbox.
Whoa. As you normally would send to your friends and family,
which he actually still has said skeleton, and he like on its wall on his wall.
That's
worked with cult podcast, because lots of cults don't like it when you call them cults.
Apparently not. Take offense to it for some reason.
For some reason.
This poor woman. Just trying to think of like any kind of joy that she'd try to extrapolate within her life, you know, taking care of those two boys, you know?
Yeah.
I would imagine that sometimes she might take them to like, I don't know, the park, maybe a zoo, maybe even our next Maine-ism.
Hey, it's a Maine-ism.
Where are we going?
We're talking about the Maine State Aquarium.
Oh, I thought about going there when we were in Booth Bay, but it was
Well,
closed.
Guess what, B? It's reopening.
Yay!
It's been closed since the pandemic in 2020.
Yeah.
But it's reopening this summer, B. Up in Booth Bay, yes, as B has just said, it's a nice little experience, famous for its touch pool and little exhibits. It sounds like they've been doing some renovations as well to buildings, and those will be opening up sometime soon. I don't know if these will be fully open by the summer, but you can go ahead and check out the Maine State Aquarium this summer, starting June 28th to July 1st, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and then opening again for July 6th to September 4th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
It's not that far of a drive. We can do a day trip.
We could do a day trip Thursdays through Saturdays. So just be mindful of those dates. Yeah, famous for their touch pool, sea creatures touch you. And they're going to have a giant redesigned aquarium that's going to be presented.
Have you ever touched a manta ray?
Yeah, they're super slimy. Like the little manta rays that you find in the touch pools. I like those the most.
I love sea creatures.
I like sea creatures too. I love an aquarium. I think those are always fun to go to. I'd love to go to the Boston Aquarium, you know.
Have you not been?
No, I've never been.
Because we were going to try, but.
We're going to try, but I think it was just sort of like a hassle to do that. And we were doing the Gorillaz concert that day, so I was cool not doing that. I think we were also kind of broke at the same time. So it's
expensive to get into the Boston Aquarium, but it is a very good time. Allegra and I have gone there a couple times. I want to go, because I think there's one on the Eastern Seaboard that has a whale shark.
Oh, I know this one.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
I've
I
been
can't
to
think
it.
Of it.
It's the Atlanta Aquarium.
Yes, I want to go.
It has the biggest like tank in America as well. That's where the whale shark is located. It's impressive. It's amazing. It's near the Coca-Cola Museum. It's a massive aquarium, and this giant tank is featured there, where it has the whale shark, and also just so many freaking sea creatures. It looks amazing. I've always wanted to do like those dive experiences. Yes. You know, you can pay like a shitload of money to go dive into
the
tank.
Do you
want to
go take diving lessons with me?
Yeah, I'd be down.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, I'm down for something
dangerous. Because I asked my grandmother if she would do it, because my grandmother will do just about anything, but she has asthma, so she is not able to do snorkeling or diving.
Yeah.
So
it'll be scary.
I need a pal.
Okay. I'll dive with you. Okay. So just a little bit more details though about the Maine State Aquarium before we head out the door here. The full aquarium isn't opened yet still. They're still building things up, but it's going to be gearing for a launch sometime in 2024. So I mentioned previously they're going to be closing after September 4th. That's to finish out the rest of the build.
Okay.
So we're looking at a full hard opening 2024, where everything will be built out. And I guess they'll have a more consistent schedule that you can go hang out at the aquarium for. And since this is state run also, this will be going in perpetuity, I think.
Yeah.
You know, dollars will be put towards it, which is nice, because it's like an aquarium probably in Maine only gets the summer months where it's actually busy.
Yeah.
But this will probably be cool to, it would be cool to access that as a mainer as well. Yeah.
That's so cool. That makes me really happy. Like I said, I'm very big on, in this house, we love marine biology.
Love it.
We love marine biology.
I was going to, that was one of my first choices when I was a kid of what I wanted to go do when I grew up. Yeah. More of like a serious decision. It's like, I want to be a marine biologist because I fucking loved aquariums. I remember I went to an aquarium by myself one time when I was really young.
Yeah.
And I hung out with one of the like tank keepers, and they were really fun because they just kept talking with me because I was also like the only person there.
Yeah.
So they did like a squid dissection, and we were like talking a lot about like the squid itself and like what works and like, you know, how that ink go.
I love squids.
Yeah. And I got to keep its little spine. It's like a little weird. It's almost like plastic. It's so weird. But it's like the only kind of hard thing with like a squid.
Squids and then also like octopus are really interesting. I think there was an aquarium. I think it was the Boston Aquarium. But like they kept having fish disappear, and it was because the octopus was getting into the escaping its tank, going into the other tanks, eating those fish and then sneaking back into their tank.
Sneaky little octopus. Yeah, you got to put the octopus on lockdown. The octopus will find a way to get out.
That's kind of why.
Also pretty fucking smart that it goes back into its tank.
They did it because they sort of show that in Finding Dory. And I really appreciated that having had that information about octopus.
Oh, yeah. The octopus is just like squeezing throughout all the pipes and the
doing whatever, trying to escape.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Allegra's a big whale person.
Big whale person?
She loves whales.
Loves that whale tail.
She loves whale tails. Absolutely. Which also, that wraps in because that's the 90s. Thank you all so much for listening to this very downer episode of Homegrown Horror.
It had a nice ending, I think.
It wraps up with a bow as opposed to a lot of other cases. There is that. But if you would like to reach out to us, let us know what you think of the podcast. If you want to chat, have recommendations for stories or movies for us to watch, you can reach out to us at homegrownhorrorpod@gmail.com or reach out to us on Instagram at homegrownhorrorpod. And if you are interested, you can always review us, rate us on Apple Podcasts. But more than anything, we're just happy that you have come along for the ride once more.
Thank you very much, everybody. Bye.